Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Bobby Mo Football Show. I'm your host, Sam Anthony, and alongside me, joining me today, is Michael Shuley and Gregory Sutton.
Hello, hello, hello. How's it going?
Good. You guys having a good afternoon? Enjoy your weekend?
I mean, if it wasn't for the rain, it'd be a little bit better. Maybe a little bit outside, but it's not a bad day.
Yeah, so, you know, pretty good. So let's break it down. Let's, you know, kind of go through what we are. This is the very first episode of the Bobby Mo Football Show. And if you can't tell by the name, we're going to talk about everything going on with Robert Morris Football. The good, the bad, everything in between there. So we're going to start off our very first episode. We are in week two of the football season. Week one, Robert Morris lost 49-28 to the Flyers of Dayton. This past week was Robert Morris's home opener against the Virginia State Trojans of Division II. So a tier below Robert Morris, and Robert Morris squeaked by the Trojans 22-19 thanks to an onside kick, an 81-yard touchdown, and what was it, like a 7-8-yard touchdown pass to Warren Robinson?
I believe it was something like 14 yards. Yeah. It was a little bit further out. It was still in the red zone, or green zone as some teams call it. Let's put it this way. I'll say it bluntly. If Virginia State has a kicker, they win that football game.
And if Robert Morris doesn't put together a minute of 18, the only minute of 18 in which, personally, that I consider, and I believe that you guys are in the same, you know, mindset as me, it was a minute 18, the only minute 18 of good football that we saw from the Colonials, they don't win that game.
I mean, they executed perfectly in that stretch, and really in a game where that offense was really rough to watch at times. I mean, the whole first half, really, there was nothing going on. That first quarter, I think, ended 0-0. They went into the half up a point at 7-6 because Virginia State missed the extra point, of course. Once again, didn't have a kicker. But, yeah, the run game really didn't have anything going on. I want to say it was 70 yards on the ground? 78 on 28 carries, 2.8 yards a carry for the Colonials. That's not going to cut it. And like you emphasized before, it's a Division II opponent, which, granted, Virginia State was 10-1 last year. They, I believe it was Norfolk State they lost to in the championship. Norfolk State they lost to last, or the week previous to this one. But man, oh man.
It wasn't good. It was a game that a lot of people expected them to win handily, especially because of the fact that the offense looked spectacular the week before against Dayton. 416 total yards of offense, which was their most since September 28th, 2013. It was the most first downs for the Colonials, 26 first downs since 2011. You had Jimmy Walker, who is slowly climbing up the leaderboards of the all-time performing quarterbacks of this program, with 219 yards and three touchdowns of his own. And they came out against this Division II opponent and put up 100 less yards. And you got to think, you know, Jimmy Walker had over 200 yards passing, but 81 of those yards were on one third of Matthew Gonzalez. That essentially was what sparked their offense.
Yeah, and I mean, I wrote it in my article yesterday. He put up 225 passing yards. 129 of those passing yards came in that 1 minute and 18 second stretch where they scored the two touchdowns and had that onside kick. And, of course, that was all sparked by that 81-yard touchdown from Gonzalez. And that touchdown came off of, it was what, like 3rd and 17? So even up to that point in the drive where, before they gotten that touchdown, they hadn't looked good. It seemed like sack after sack. And I feel the offensive line has been kind of a strength of this team. We didn't really see Dayton get too much pressure on Walker last week. I mean, sure, there were some instances, but that's going to come and go with every game. But I felt they kept him pretty clean. And then even in the first half of this game, I felt that Virginia State's defensive line, they weren't getting a whole lot of pressure on Walker. But then that second half, it was kind of different. They were applying more pressure. They had the fumble recovered for a touchdown to make it 19-7. But, yeah, it was 3rd and 7. And honestly, that's how it is sometimes in football. You get a break in the coverage, and Robert Morris took advantage of that.
But my question to you is, you know, if most of the offense is coming from that one span, what were they doing the rest of the game? That there was zero offense going on. The team was struggling to get down the field. Meanwhile, a team like Virginia State was going down the field at will. And like you said, it seemed like they would get to about the 20-yard line every time, have to go for it on fourth down and not get it. But if they had a field goal kicker, that's so many more points on the board. That's a lot more scoring. So for the Colonials, it just you wonder on both sides of the ball where that performance came from, because even at the end of that game, everyone saw it. Virginia State drove down the field and with 1 second left, had the ball at the 3-yard line. And the only reason that the game did not go to overtime was because, again, they didn't have a kicker. And it got blocked because he wasn't getting anything under those footballs the entire game. And you can sit there and you can celebrate and you can enjoy the fact that they got this victory in such a dramatic fashion. But the drama was built from the inability of Virginia State's kicker.
Absolutely. I mean, he missed 2 field goals and had the one blocked at the end of the game. And let's keep in mind, they could have easily scored a touchdown to win the game at the end right there, Virginia State. They had the one timeout left, which came to their advantage right at the end. People thought the time had expired at the 1-yard line or so, wherever they were at, and they ended up going back in, reviewing it, putting a second back on the clock. But, I mean, I think that's the main storyline out of this game is Robert Morris should have lost this football game. The defense gave up over 400 yards for the second week in a row. And they're just getting slaughtered on the ground. And
almost 300 yards per game on the ground they're letting up right now.
They gave up 267. VSU only scored or racked up 267 yards last week. And then they came in and I wouldn't say almost doubled it, but they got significantly more than they had the previous week.
Yeah, I mean, Greg, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this game. You were there with me and Mike. What were you seeing?
So, in all honesty, Sam, the first half was kind of, in my word, pathetic on Robert Morris' side of the ball.
That was a strong word right there.
I mean, they didn't – it's a D2 opponent. They should – like you said, you were expecting the greatest performance offensively from RMU ever.
I was very confident in that.
Very confident in that. And there's no reason they shouldn't have put up 500 yards against this D2 opponent. They put up 400 around there. Against Dayton, a very good opponent that they've only won once in the past 18 years. And so, in my opinion, they should have put up way more than, around 300? They
did. 303 yards.
So, in my opinion, it was a pathetic performance in the first half, and they honestly just got lucky there in the last minute 19 to come back and win the football game. Robert Morris, in all honesty, I wouldn't call that a win for them as much as just a lucky chain of events.
I liked, at the end of the game, I thought Bernard Clark did a really great job of, you know, there's lessons with this because there are redeemable things about this game. And that minute 18 is the big part of that. And the fact that, you know, you're down 19-7 to this really, really bad opponent. You haven't played a good game at all. And it would be really easy for a lot of those guys on a team that, you know, guys, seniors especially, that have been on this team for the last 3 years and really been there, you know, when they've only won 2 games in each of the last 2 seasons, to just wrap it up and say, all right, this is it. I'm not going to try anymore. But they kept pushing. They made the plays when they needed to make the plays. I thought that was a great way to spin it, was that they overcame adversity. And they did. And so you can sit there and you can go, because I don't think there's a lot to be happy about with this loss. And I will say the one redeemable thing is the fact that they continued to fight. And to me, it shows that if they can hang in games with NEC opponents, that they'll still have that mentality to go in and win those games. So that's the big lesson to me, and that's the one thing you can take away from that.
And even if you go back to that Dayton game, I believe they went into halftime. It was, 28-21? Something like that. They were only down a touchdown, and they were getting the ball back. So you get another couple breaks like they did against Virginia State where they have that minute and 18 seconds. That onside kick was executed to perfection. But you never know. You get a break. There's a fumble. Like, for example, RMU goes down, scores against Dayton 28-28. Guy muffs the kickoff. Does something like that, you get the ball back in your striking range. So I like what you said there, where if they can compete with team or hang in there with teams in the NEC, they're going to put themselves in a chance to win the game. And I completely agree with that, because a player or two goes their way against Dayton, and really this is the case for a lot of games, and you're right there within striking distance.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about this game. Are there any final thoughts you guys have on this performance from Virginia State?
Well, if you look back at their statistics last year, I think it was something like they had 28 rushing touchdowns on the road last year. I mean, they are a very good offensive football team from last season. Yes, they lost a lot of people coming into this game, but Virginia State's not too shabby of a Division II opponent. It's a good test. I think you could easily make the comparison that Virginia State is very close to, and this is probably why they're on the schedule, they're very close to the same quality of an NEC team.
Yeah, and I think you're right in the fact that you're going to a lot of these guys that are playing for Virginia State are playing at a Division II level with the idea of trying to get up to a Division I level. That's why you see, you know, again, Virginia State lost 18 starters, and a lot of that was probably because you saw a lot of players playing on a very talented team transfer up to Division I schools. So I think you're right in terms of you have a lot of guys that are on the cusp of being great, which is very similar to the talent you're going to get in the Northeast Conference. So as much as it is Division II, I think that also does make these things a little bit more redeemable. But again, I still expected more from this Colonials team. Something that I want to talk about, something that really hasn't been brought up a lot from discussion involving this game, was the appearance of Caleb Lewis. I believe it was Jimmy Walker just thrown an interception. He had been struggling all game, and Coach Clark decided to make the decision not to go with the second string in redshirt freshman George Martin, but to surpass him and go to the LSU transfer, Caleb Lewis, who came in. He was 4 for 6 with 20 yards. On that sixth attempt, he threw an interception. End of the drive. He tried to force it between two defenders, ended up in an interception, and that was it. Walker came back in, and it was his team for the rest of the game. So from you guys, what I want to hear is, one, first off, what were your thoughts on Caleb Lewis's rather time on the field? What were your thoughts in the decision by Bernard Clark not only to pull him for that brief amount of time, but to go with Lewis instead of Martin? And do you think that Caleb Lewis, despite getting pulled from that game, deserves another shot to go prove himself if something similar like to this happens again?
So in that whole aspect of things, jumping over your second string quarterback going straight to the third string, I think it was more of a wake-up call to everybody to say that this isn't going to go in depth chart order. I can put whoever I want on the field from his perspective to wake you guys up, make you guys realize that we're going to play this game, we need to play it in order to win. And this whole game was a wake-up call to the entire team going up against his D2 opponent, Virginia State, and almost losing. And I think that's what Coach Bernard Clark was kind of going for in that situation, was to kind of wake up the rest of like the starters and maybe the second stringers that might get a chance if a starter gets hurt, to make them realize that they're not necessarily going to go in if something goes wrong, but maybe necessarily that they jump to wherever they think is the best in that situation. And with Caleb Lewis's time on the field, that sixth pass where he tried to force it in between those two defenders, it just showed how comfortable he was in that point in time. Six plays, he was trying to force a ball like that. It really showed that he was comfortable in his shoes on the field here at Robert Morris.
For me, I think it's kind of an experience thing. You know, Lewis being the transfer, he has a few more years under his belt. And granted, he might not have the playing time experience, I still think there might be something to said with him being at LSU and in that program, and it's a higher program, the maturation of just overall quarterback intelligence possibly, opposed to, like, arm ability. So the freshman, his name's escaping
George
me right
Martin.
Now. George Martin. I was drawing a blank. I apologize. He might have more arm talent than Lewis, but Lewis might be able to, you know, he might read the game better. And you know what? I like the point that Greg made is he had the confidence to try to force that throw. And, I mean, we even see it with quarterbacks like Ben Roethlisberger, who, I mean, he forces throws all the time. That's kind of what he does.
In Cleveland.
And not to compare Caleb Lewis to Ben Roethlisberger, but I certainly think there's a certain type of confidence. Like, yeah, I have enough arm strength. I can put enough on it to get it in that window. And yes, he threw an interception on just six passes, but Walker also threw two yesterday or on Saturday. And granted, those were not very nice throwing conditions at Joe Walton Stadium either.
Yeah, I mean, Greg, I 100% agree with you with Bernard Clark. I think that's the mentality is, again, anybody can come in at any time. When he first came in as new head coach, what he told me when I sat down with him is he goes, look, nobody has any spots. There are no starters anywhere. I'm going to take a complete look at this team and based on that decide who I want my starters to be, which I think is a great way to look at it because especially with a team like Robert Morris that has struggled traditionally, you sit there and like, look, we're trying to create a winning football team and you are all on this team because we believe that you can help make us a winning football team. So you have to go out and show it. The one thing I do question is the length of time that Lewis was out there. And I understand the timing of it because he just threw that interception, get rid of him. But up till that point, he was 4 for 5. Granted, they weren't long throws, but he looked comfortable in the pocket. He was making good throws. He was making the right throws. I don't know what the play calling was, whether the play calling was to start with maybe some shorter passes to kind of get him comfortable in game situation. But I question the length of time because it just seems like it was so abrupt. And for, you know, again, the idea of everyone can contribute, at the same time, like, what does that say to Lewis's confidence? As soon as he makes one mistake, you're out. You know, there's no wiggle room. Because even you talked about it, Mike, where you saying, you know, the field conditions weren't ideal and everyone kind of makes those mistakes. Clearly it worked out for Robert Morris making the move back to Walker because Walker ended up making the throw to Gonzalez and that really, really, really nice throw to Warren Robinson in the corner of the end zone. But again, I question just the move at all. If you're only going to have him in for so long and then just to pull him and put Walker right back when that mistake happens, what was the point of that move?
Well, I think when you put it that way, the move is kind of not for Caleb Lewis and his confidence, but more towards Jimmy Walker and saying, all right, this is your opportunity. It's going to this guy now. All right, you're going to have to – so I pull him out. You're going to have to go in there and show me why you deserve this job because you haven't shown it so far today. And you see Walker go back in there and those two possessions put up – I believe it was the two following possessions. There might have been a possession in there where they punted the ball, but if not, the Walker at the end of the game was by far – much better than he had been up to the point where he had been taken out of the game.
And to me, that's the only option in my head, is that it had to be something to send a message to Jimmy Walker. Because if I'm Caleb Lewis, I'm not happy with the way that game went for me. Because it does. It feels like Walker, it felt like Lewis got in, made one mistake, and got pulled. And this is a guy that already came in, already had some expectations that he was going to compete to be that starter, gets sent to the third string. I just question what that does for Caleb Lewis. And if you really brought in Caleb Lewis as a guy you thought could be a starter and could contribute to this team, you're hurting his confidence a little bit. I think in terms of long-term and the long game, it might be good for Lewis because I believe that something that Clark is really big on, Coach Clark, is working with personalities, I think basically saying, hey, we do have confidence in you to get in this game, but you need to show me you want to be there. I think that, you know, again, we don't see what goes on in a day-to-day basis. We don't know what the reaction from Caleb Lewis was like once he was told he wasn't the starter on the team and he was third string. So all of this for us is just speculation at this point. Clark hasn't given me a reason to doubt him. So I trust the move, and I think you're right. I think it was a Jimmy Walker kind of motivational move, and it paid off. They won the game. So even sitting here questioning it, I guess, doesn't make that big of a difference, you know?
No, but it is a fair point to raise about what does that show people on the team like Caleb Lewis, where he comes in and he's thinking, all right, this is my opportunity, and he makes a mistake. Now, if he gets that opportunity again, is he going to be skittish? Is he going to see that throw on the field where if I hit that throw, it's a major play, but if I miss it or the defensive back makes a great play on the ball, I throw an interception? And not saying that you want your quarterback to be this gambler who's always taking these chances, but is it going to hurt your confidence to where they hesitate that little bit? And that little bit of hesitation, if they just go with their gut and they sling it down the field, the window's open. But if they hesitate that half second and then throw it, the window's shut, and that's an interception.
Yep.
And could that have possibly been what led to Lewis's interception? Because from where we were in the stands, it looked like there was a little bit of something there, but it closed quick. And, I mean, it does close quick. That's the level of football these guys are playing. The defensive backs are good enough to where if they see where you're going with the ball, they're going to start moving their way over there, and they're quick enough to get over there in order to make a play on the ball. So, for me, I would hope that Caleb Lewis, next time he gets in the game, because I do think he'll get another chance. It's a long season, and I don't think this team's going to be, or necessarily the quarterback play from Walker is going to be lights out enough to where he's one of those players that you can't take off the field. I think Lewis will get his chance back in the game, and I would hope that for the team's sake that he comes out there and he's confident in his abilities.
Yeah. So that's actually a really good transition point. You were talking about, you know, it is a long season. So we're going to move into our weekly segment called The Bigger Picture, guys. And what we're going to do here in this segment is look long term. It's only week 2, But we're going to give our thoughts on how we think the team's going to do the rest of the season, sort of long-term goals on individual accolades and all sorts of stuff. So, first thing I want to ask you guys is if you look at the rest of the season for Robert Morris, and based on how they've played so far, what do you believe their final record will be? They're at 1-1 right now. There are 9 more games left to play.
I think in all reality, this week was really truly that wake-up call that we talked about with Jimmy Walker and the rest of the team. So I think they're going to realize that they can't overlook like teams that they think they should beat, which might have been a problem with this past week, this past weekend's game. But I think they're probably going to keep their heads up a little bit higher, take everybody with a grain of salt. And in all reality, I think they're probably going to finish around 6-5, 7-4, somewhere in there, just above 500, but enough improvement last year to where that culture Clark's trying to build is actually going to happen and stick around for a little bit longer than Banaszak may have.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think they're going to be able to win 6 or 7 games. I just don't see it happening. Granted, I'm not going to put it on Clark because he really hasn't gotten his guys in there, and he's still kind of playing with the old guard. You know what I'm saying from that perspective. I think this team's good enough to win 4 games. And you know what? We've seen 2 different teams. The week 1 team versus Dayton was very good and promising. The week 2 team versus Virginia State, like we stated, didn't look too hot. The one consistent thing that you could say is the defense needs some improvement, especially on the run game. Dayton burned them on the run. Virginia State burned them on the run. And they're going to go play James Madison this weekend. And that's a tough team. Weather permitting, though, you never know. If they are going to dedicate and sell out, and let's say it's a nasty game, it's pouring down rain, and we've heard possible reports of inclement weather for that game, you never know. They might get one of those games where they play the defensive front plays really well, and they shut down James Madison, and they might be able to grind out a close game, kind of in the same like scoring range as last week versus Virginia State, or they could get blown out. So you never know what you're going to get, but I do think at the end of the day, this team's going to win somewhere around 4 games, maybe 5.
So I'm going to go more in the middle of you guys, closer towards Greg. I think that their peak is 6 wins right now. I think a 6-5 winning season, I think they're going to go 5-6, just because, again, the thing I really liked about this Virginia State game was the fact that just because they were down didn't mean they were out. And there's going to be plenty of teams in this conference that the offense isn't going to be that impressive. They're going to hang around Robert Morris a little bit, and Robert Morris is going to be able to do some stuff late in the game to get a win, because I think that's the way Clark's coaching is: outplay them in the fourth quarter. Keep grinding, keep grinding, keep grinding. You're going to outwork these guys, and that's how you're going to win. So I think with that, they're going to sneak away with a couple wins. I think the challenges for them are going to be Sacred Heart and I think Duquesne. I think those are going to be 2 very strong teams. But I think that they can go to Bryant and get a win. I think that they can go to Wagner and get a win. I think they can beat Central Connecticut. So I really do believe that 5 or 6 wins are in the cards for the Colonials. And I'm pretty confident in that, just because of the fact that this offense has looked impressive. It's finding consistency. And it's finding consistency in that run game, because that's going to enable Jimmy Walker to do a lot more. So that's where I'm going to stand there. My next question for you gentlemen is, do you believe Robert Morris can win the NEC? I know you said 4 wins, Mike, so I feel like your answer is going to be no.
I mean, right now at this juncture in time, I'm leaning towards no. I just don't think, looking back at last year's schedule, 51-14 to Duquesne. Yes, this is a different team, but then again, what has the issue been so far? The defense. If you gave up 51 points to him last year, and the defense looked better last year, I think that would be fair to say, right? So I'm concerned about that game. I'm concerned about Central Connecticut. I think those are 2 teams that I would pick them to beat us, or to beat Robert Morris, rather. Central Connecticut at home. I like that it's at home. That's homecoming, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
I just don't think it's going to happen. At Duquesne, I think that's going to be a loss. We'll go back and cover this Bryant game real quick. I think they'll lose to James Madison. I think they'll beat Bryant. lose to Central Connecticut, lose to Duquesne. I think they'll beat Central State, another D2 team.
Yeah.
And I think that could be a turning point this season, that game. You have four games remaining, three in the NEC after that. If they go in there and they, or Central State comes here, and they beat the snot out of Central State, I'm talking like 56 to like, I don't know,
10?
17, oh. 10, somewhere in there. They have St. Francis, Sacred Heart, Eastern Kentucky, which I don't know too much about Eastern Kentucky, and Wagner. Looking at their games against Wagner, 7-27 last year. I think that could be a possible win. St. Francis and Sacred Heart, both other games, they could be possible wins.
I think the thing you got to consider about Sacred Heart, they've defeated two Patriot League teams already this year. They've looked really impressive. And again, Patriot League quality is a lot better than NEC quality. I think Sacred Heart is going to look to compete for that conference title. Eastern Kentucky, to give you a little background, they played Marshall, an FBS opponent, this past weekend, and they only lost 32-16. They were competitive with Marshall, who is a very good team. I don't see them going and getting those wins. So that's where you're – I think there's more of a dilemma there with what you're saying here.
Yeah, and that was my ignorance on Eastern Kentucky. I didn't know about that. But, I mean, I think depending on how a couple – I think they're going to be closer games, but I truly think at the end of the day they're going to finish, like, in the upper echelon of the middle of the pack, if that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, Greg, what do you think? NEC champions Robert Morris this year?
I don't think so, even with my optimistic, like, at most optimistic 7-4 season. I don't think that they have enough to go the distance in the first year in the Clark era. But I do think they're definitely going to be looking more competitive this year. I mean, they didn't win against Dayton. It wasn't a good showing the second half of the Colonials. But I think that the offense is a different offense this year. And that kind of counter, not really, but it kind of counterbalances the defensive lacking. They're putting up a little bit more yardage, scoring a little bit more. So I think that 6-5, 7-4 season, I'm thinking they're going to have, even though they look a little bit better offensively, I don't think they're going to have as much gas, a little bit more break from the saying that they used before the game. And I don't think they're going to be able to finish out the season the way they're looking to, the way we expect them to.
All right, so you want to hear my take on this, and then we'll move right along here. If Robert Morris can win at least half of their conference games on the road, they will win the conference because they won't drop a conference game at home. And why I say that is because Robert Morris has not won a road game in 2 years. The last time they won a road game was not last season, not the season before that, but the season before that. So 3 seasons ago, they won on the road. If they can go, especially that first road game in conference against Bryant, and win that game, I believe Robert Morris can win the NEC. That's all I have.
But I feel like in that aspect of things, going on the road is a very important aspect of the game. I mean, even winning one or two of those games on the road might
huge.
Help. I don't think you have to win half per se, but I think if you win that first one against Bryant in the NEC and you even perform better at home, even against non-conference teams.
Well, you have to go at least 2-2 on the road. If they don't go 2-2 on the road, then, I mean, even if they, yeah, if they, let's say they win one, they go 1-3 on the road and they go undefeated, they're still going to be 4-3 in conference, and that's not going to get you a conference championship.
That's what I'm saying. I know that's the reason why I don't think.
So you think they need to win more than half?
I'm just saying that I don't think they're going to win that half. You're saying that's the reason they're not going to get a conference.
Okay. Mike Shuley, any thoughts?
I think they're going to drop some at home. I mean, they might go out and beat Bryant on the road, but I think they're going to lose to Central Connecticut, as I said, at home. And I think even Wagner, that's another game that's going to be a toss-up at the end of the season. Like I said a little bit earlier, 27-7, closer game, but last season. But you never know. And then once you go on the road, like you said, they have a very poor road record. I just don't see it in the cards for this team.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for the big picture today because we are running out of time here. So we are going to jump ahead and look ahead to Robert Morris's battle this weekend with James Madison, the number 2 team in the nation. Very impressive pedigree. 2 years ago, they won the national championship. And even though they have a new head coach this year, are looking very good, very impressive. Guys, realistically, for a team like Robert Morris that traditionally gets one of these high-ranking opponents every year, what should be the expectation? Should the expectations be to go win? Should the expectations be that Robert Morris should even compete? Should the expectations be that Robert Morris gets blown out?
So from my perspective of things, I think that the first two games in a new coach under a new coaching staff is kind of finding your footing, finding your swing, finding your rhythm and everything like that, where the third game is kind of what we're probably going to see the rest of the season. So in my opinion, from what we've seen, if you combine the two things together with the Dayton and Virginia State game, if you combine those two performances, I think we're going to see a competitive game against James Madison with Robert Morris. I like what I've seen so far. I like the competitiveness they showed in the end of the fourth quarter there. And I really think that Robert Morris has a good chance to go out there and beat this well-pedigreed team that we've seen, even though that the coaching isn't always the whole thing. With a new coach, there's still the players, like you said, Sam, the people that have been there for 3 or 4 years now that are going to carry on the culture and then know what winning is. So I think that Robert Morris is going to go out there with our new culture and meet their culture mixed in with their new coach and really compete with James Madison and show not only James Madison fans but Colonial fans what's in the tank for the rest of the season.
I disagree.
I disagree as well, yeah. I'm going to say. I appreciate the positivity and the optimism, but
all that culture talk, well, there's going to be a shock this weekend. And I don't think it's going to be in favor for Robert Morris. Well, I don't think they're going to get blown out, but let's put it this
way. I think they're going to get blown out, if you want my honest opinion.
Well, depending on the weather. Depending on the weather.
I think even in the weather, I think if they can't stop the run, the weather doesn't matter.
That's true. Let's put it this way. James Madison last week played Norfolk State, won 17-0. I believe Norfolk State beat Virginia State the previous week like 34-13. That gives me some concern. If Norfolk State has theoretically a better offense, I think you could say, because they put up more points on by the logic of they put up more points than on Virginia State than RMU did, and they couldn't put up anything against James Madison. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but you can't win if you can't score, correct?
Well, I think you're correct, but I think there's more to it because you were at that game and you saw the way the weather was, and I know it's a turf field, so that takes away that aspect, but it's incredibly hard to pass the ball, which, again, if we're looking at this Robert Morris team, that's their strength, is their passing game right now this year. It's only been 2 weeks, but Jimmy Walker is the 42nd ranked passer in terms of passing yards in the FCS. So I think weather had a lot to do with that. That being said, your point about James Madison having a great defense is still accurate, and it's going to be difficult to get points on the board. I think if Robert Morris can't score right away and get on the board quick like they did against Dayton, where that kind of is what kept them in that game, I think James Madison just runs away with it. I think that they would get ahead early and just run and don't stop and don't stop and don't stop, and Robert Morris will keep trying to force things. And that's how I believe that it's going to happen. I think that offense is good, but I don't think they're good enough to get going off the bat against the second-ranked team in the country.
For me, a good game for Robert Morris would be going into half down a possession or within a possession. If you go down...
Do you think that's possible?
It depends.
I don't think it's possible. I really don't.
I think the weather is such a wild card, and if we do want to point the finger at the weather this week, well, let's say they come out and they're throwing the ball around like they did against Dayton, because the run game hasn't been too impressive.
No.
But let's say they drop 6 or 7 in coverage and just, all right, we're going to take your receivers away. We're going to take Gonzo away, who's been phenomenal this year. We're going to put a safety one-on-one on Gonzo and just shut him down the seam. I think there's going to be real big problems for Robert Morris. Do I really think it's possible that they go into half within a possession or down a possession? I really don't. I could see them going in down 2 touchdowns, maybe 17 points. And at that point, I just don't think RMU is going to have the offensive strength to come back if they're down by any margin that size.
So let's hear it. Let's hear, now that we've gotten our thoughts out on this game, let's hear score predictions. Greg, since, you know, you're probably going to have the most positive score prediction, I'll let you go first.
You did say that they were going to win.
I know. That's what I was trying to figure that out.
He's formulating a realistic score in his head.
Robert Morris It's going to be a high-scoring game total-wise.
Really?
I think
okay.
so. Because
so you're telling me that RMU can beat this team in a shootout?
Let me finish. Calm down, Kanye.
Wow.
That's a fair question. That is a fair question.
It was. I don't
Gunslinger know. Jimmy Walker throwing how many six
I
touchdowns?
Think,
is that what it's going to take?
I think Robert Morris figures out the rush game. I think they figure out what they need to do with the line.
Who's going
to
figure it out? Who are we going to see a big game from?
See, that's the problem. I don't know.
So here's my wild card. Here's my wild card. If they figure out the running game, it's going to be split between Terrence Stevens, who I love Terrence Stevens. I will tell you right now, I am a huge, huge, and I don't care what you say about the running game, I am a huge Terrence Stevens fan because of the fact that he can really get that ball moving. And even with the slow production of the entire running game, he consistently puts up about 4 or 5 yards a carry. I think between him and, wait for it, Matthew Barr. I think you get Matthew Barr in some option set.
He had a touchdown
against Virginia State. That's correct. I think you get him in option sets. You start spreading the ball a little bit, a different look. And if the weather's the way you say it, that's the only way Robert Morris gets the run game going. But I'll let you keep going.
I'm saying final score, my prediction, 38 Robert Morris, 35.
Is Nick Bisseglia going to hit another game-winning field goal? Is that the call?
No, he's going to hit it first quarter, and Robert Morris is going to decide with a touchdown around the middle of the fourth.
Wow. You heard
that's
it here first. Greg Sutton's feeling confident in the what would probably be a program-defining upset, by the way, that you just called. But I will say Greg did look at me right before that Robert Morris onside kick and go, they're going to onside kick it, and I didn't believe him.
I called multiple things that game.
So right now, you know, I guess we could probably take a little bit of validity to his word, but
I don't think Robert Morris is going to the run game. First off, we'll start with the run game. The run game hasn't shown me much of anything.
No.
At all.
Terrence Stevens, I think, has looked good.
And the freshman kid, Jackson.
Elijah Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's looked well, good as well. He has the ability to, I think, bounce off tackles
and
better
than
graduate
Stevens. Kendall Rogers Jr. I've liked him as well.
Yeah. But I really don't think the run game's going to be that great. We really haven't talked about it this week. All the turnovers that RMU has had. Walker has three turnovers already, or three interceptions, rather. My final score, I'll give it a 42-14, James Madison.
See, now you're speaking my language, Mike Shuley, because I think similar to that. I think it's going to be worse. I think you're going to see Robert Morris down 35-10 at the half. And I think you're going to see it slow down a little bit. But I think ultimately the final score ends up being, we're going to say 56-17. I'm going to stick with 56. Like I said, Robert Morris was going to score last week. Give that to James Madison. Add a touchdown for Robert Morris, 56-17. And the Colonials, they're happy with the loss. They will be happy with the loss because the offense will look good and they'll continue to drive and they'll have this confidence that they can go to Bryant next week and put up 30, 40 points.
So you're telling me the offense is going to be satisfied scoring 17 points?
Against the second best team in the nation, yeah.
All right.
So
you say so. I mean, yeah, they are the second best team in the nation. But, yeah, I what I would really like to see out of this Robert Morris team is keep them under 40 points. I think that's good. You know, just execute some things well. I don't think many people, no one's expecting them to win this game. I don't think.
Greg.
I mean, except Greg. Except Greg.
Greg's always the
outlier.
But
what would truly be good for this team is that they could go out and say, hey, we can execute on some run plays.
Yeah.
We can gain 5 yards on first down running a slant pass. We can get more receivers besides Gonzalez involved. I'd like to see maybe Barr used as kind of like a gadget because he has that ability to throw the ball still.
Yeah.
Like I said, execution. Maybe a good goal for this team is let's try to average over 4 yards a carry on the ground.
Yeah.
And maybe throw for at least 200 yards. I think that would be some good goals for this team to have coming into this JMU game.
Yeah. All right, well, unfortunately, guys, that's all the time we have for today. That's going to be it for the very first episode of the Bobby Mudd Football Show, but we will be here every Monday to give you the scoop on the upcoming week of Robert Morris football, talking about the last week of Robert Morris football, and everything in between. Some exciting stuff coming on here, so keep following us. RMU Radio, RMU Century Media. This is Sam Anthony, Mike Shuley, Greg Sutton. Thank you so much for tuning in.